Okay. Okay. Let's get started. I'm experiencing a temporary speech impairment, so it'll be over tomorrow. But it doesn't hurt or anything, so lucky I don't have too much to say today. But welcome, everybody, students and guests. Does anybody have any questions from Tuesday or last week or about your project or about anything you've heard or whatever? Okay, I'm going to ask this question, you know, every session, so, you know, get your thoughts in order. Heard about, and Margaret isn't here, so. There you are. Come on down. You're on. Margaret has a few words. Here, you can get the
microphone. Okay. Hi, everyone.
Don't hold this.
Okay. All right. So one of the things that I wanted to briefly sort of like talk about is this that communication matters. So this is something we learned in medical school that I didn't know before, and that is how you talk to patients. And patients here means when you talk to someone who you're trying to help and get information from. I know it doesn't directly, as in the people with disability are not necessarily patients, but in the course of the work you're doing, the same skills apply. So what we learn is that there are three ways of making an interview, and the most important thing is building the relationship. So I know some of you are going to go out in the community, try to talk to individuals who you're trying to help, and you're doing a lot of need finding, as we had an earlier lecture on. So building the relationship is very important because it sets the course of information that you need for your next steps. And then a good relationship helps because you get to really assess what the main priorities are for the person you want to work with. And then also, by knowing the priorities, they're able to determine what sort of, like, for us, we do managing the problems, like what we pay attention to and how we help them, which is not necessarily focused on treatment, but also like other lifestyle, environmental issues that may actually be more important than the disease for like a patient. So in your case, the device you're building may have a solution to some of the issues. So I just wanted to give you something easy that you should keep in mind when you go out there. And this is acronymed as PULSE, something precious. Anyway, so P is for partnership. So when you meeting people who you're talking to, just try to have a sense of partnership. Look at yourself, not just as someone who is coming out here and, you know, sort of like having the solution or the person who's going to save the world necessarily, but take a stance and just think about how can we work on this together. So make the partners feel like you're a team. And then empathy is very important because you would be very surprised at how being empathetic makes people talk about things that they would not necessarily want to like open up initially. So that's very important to empathize. And empathize doesn't mean being fake. Don't go like, you know, it's sort of like, I understand. And this sort of like ties in into like, you know, apologize when you feel like you probably, I don't know, you're sorry, you know, about the situation if it's not a good situation. And then respect, you know, you're on the same, I respect your condition, I respect your challenges, and, you know, yeah, it makes sense, just legitimizing that, and then also, like, support, how can I help you, what do you think is most important for you right now, so that is sort of, like, the support. So when you build your research on this kind of, like, earlier relationship, you'll really be surprised at how great of a solution you'll have, and even the solution will be more easier to adopt by the people who need it. Okay, so that was just it. Quick minutes about PULSE.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret.
Okay, well, we talked a lot about people with disabilities, but you know, animals get disabled as well. And animals need assistive technology. And, you know, this elephant was caught in a trap and lost his or her, its leg, part of leg. And so, you know, it's not uncommon to hear of custom prosthetics being made for animals. And I know that a class at Northwestern University made little booties for penguins, for older penguins who are in the zoo, and they spend all their time on concrete instead of ice, which apparently causes problems. So they made little booties for them, and I'll give you the article tomorrow so you can read about that. On Tuesday, Kareem talked about one of his pieces of assistive technology, the LiveScribe pen. It's a really interesting device that was not made for people with disabilities. What it is a pen that you use. It actually writes on paper, but it has a special notebook. The pen itself can record the strokes that you use to make the letters. So it records all that inside. It also records the audio that's happening, like in a classroom situation. And it knows where it is on the paper and which page it's on. It has some special markings down here. So what you can do afterwards is touch the pen to the paper, and it will speak what the audio that was going on at that time you were taking that particular note. So it's very handy for Kareem, and this is a device that's been on the market for 3 or 4 years now. I think this starts at about $120, and you can buy them in Target. So in November, I went to the Abilities Expo, and I saw this really neat car. This is an adapted race car for a race car driver who has a spinal cord injury. So what they've done is replaced the steering wheel and the brake and the accelerator with this mechanical device here that he puts his arms into, and he can steer by rotating it. And I think the left and right pivot along these pivot points over here, and I think that controls the accelerator and brake. And that's another view. But, you know, here he is racing. So, I mean, he's competing against, professional racers. Well, he's a professional racer, too. So I thought that's kind of curious that you can do something like that for a race car driver with a disability. Also at that Abilities Expo, I saw this very fancy robotic arm that's supposed to be mounted on a wheelchair. It looked really nice. It moved nice and smoothly and stuff. But I want to ask you, how much do you think it costs? Who has a guess?
$20K.
Anybody think it's higher than $20K? So what's your bid? The price is right. Closest price without going over wins.
$80,000.
Okay, you're out. Anybody else have a number? $5K? More than $5K and more than 10. Come on.
$40,000.
You win. So talk to the company and tell them you guessed the price and I'll send you one. So $40,000. So this would be more than the price of any power wheelchair out there. So it's really slick, but very expensive, and probably not too many are going to be sold. But it looks nice. See, happens with a lot of devices, because they have such a small market that they really need to charge a lot of money to recoup all their research costs. So just a few reminders for people who have missed lectures. You need to get the makeup document summary to me within a week. I really encourage you to go back and look at some of the beautiful pictures that Arna and I have taken. Well, he did the beautiful ones. I did the quick ones. Also, weekly progress reports for anybody that's working on a team or individual project. I just need a little bit of information to know where you are, that you're working on it. If you have any problems, if you're stuck, at any time, let me know. If you have problems with team members, let me know. If you have questions for me, I'm the guy to talk to. If you build something, I want to see it. I want to see every prototype you make, because that counts toward your grade. Even if you have sketches or something, you know, I want to see those. Also, if you want, I can sit in on a brainstorming session with you, help you out. Again, I'm on your side. I want to see you succeed. So that's that. You can enlist the help of community members and other people, but you got to remember, they're not taking the class. They don't have the same deadlines that you do. And so you can't count on them to being there when you need them. Okay? So, you know, you can have your friends in the dorm and other people, they'll help you, but, you know, there may come a critical time that you're going to need them, and then they'll say, well, I got something else to do, so I can't help you. I've seen that happen before, so just be aware of that. Okay? Over the years, I've collected some web links about interacting with and writing about people with disabilities. There's about 6 or 7 of them on the at this webpage. So that would be good for you to look through in writing about things. And Margaret talked about the doctor-patient relationship being similar to the Stanford student-disabled user relationship. So you can use that information as well. The suggestion box is working well. Somebody suggested that I bring these little brownie bits, which you can see I listen. Okay. Somebody asked about the project, your project budget, and this is very important. So your project should not cost more than $200, and I will the course will reimburse you for that first $200. So keep all your receipts and $200. And there's a web page which I'll point you to that lists how you go about getting reimbursed. It's not just handing me the receipts. You got to do more than that. Okay. So next Tuesday is going to be a very interesting talk, a triple header of people talking about the international perspectives in an assistive technology. So I'm really looking forward to that as well. So today we're going to have Catherine Strausser from Exobionics talk. So we're going to take a little break now to move things around, take this opportunity to sign in if you haven't done so, and we'll see you in about 5 minutes. Thank you. Sorry?
Catherine Strasser.
Hi, everyone. My name is Katie Strasser, or Catherine, but I go by Katie. So if you yell Catherine at me, I may or may not respond. I am a senior controls engineer at Exobionics. For those of you who actually know what a controls engineer does, I'm sorry. For everyone else, basically I write software, but my degree is in mechanical engineering, and basically I'm pretty confused about what I do. But I work at Exo, and I have been working on this exoskeleton project since grad school. I went to the other school for my PhD. Sorry. And started working on exoskeletons. I got into it, my advisor actually, I knew I wanted to work with people, I knew I wanted to work with robotics. My end goal actually used to be to go build rovers for NASA. That was like the dream that I was going to, but I talked to the professor I had chosen for my advisor, and he said, hey, we have this new project that we're working on. We're going to try to do better rehab for stroke patients and for those with spinal cord injury. And two summers previous, I had actually had the opportunity to live with my grandmother while I was in college and interning up in Pittsburgh. I lived with my grandma, who had suffered a stroke about 10 years earlier. And I had seen her progress from right after her stroke, although I was in second grade, so my appreciation for it was pretty minimal. But I thought it was really cool to push her in a wheelchair. But beyond that, I saw how difficult a lot of things were for her and how much she could have benefited from better rehabilitation, more, you know, accessible technology that could have helped make her quality of life better. And so when my advisor gave me the opportunity to work on this project, I clearly couldn't say no. Started as a master's student in the human engineering lab at Cal and intended to leave with my master's. Forgot to leave at some point 3 years later, graduated with my PhD, and have been fortunate enough to be able to continue my work on exoskeleton and on this device specifically at Exobionics. So today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the design, what we thought about when we were working on the exoskeletons, some of the considerations that maybe you guys have all thought of because you're brilliant and go to Stanford. But maybe some of them you haven't. And I kind of hope to not just talk about Exo, though I'm going to talk about Exo because that's the one I know best, but design of assistive technology and exoskeletons and things like that in general. So I'm going to keep my lecture talk, whatever this is, pretty short because what everyone really wants to see is the robot work. I'm not that exciting compared to a robot. So I brought a robot. Also, for those of you in the class, you know Fernanda. For those of you not in the class, this is Fernanda. And she has been working with Exo for the past 2 years, giving us input and helping us develop this device as a user. And she happens to be in the class, so it kind of worked out. So she's going to walk. So it's going to be awesome. Okay. So here's what I'm going to talk about. Basically, the exoskeleton, how we design it, how we control it, and by control it, I do not mean that I'm going to get into dynamic simulations or any math, so don't worry, you won't fall asleep. And then, of course, demo and Q&A. Okay? Okay. In case you don't know, I figured I'd put this out here so we're all on the same page. Spinal cord injury, basically, a lot of people have spinal cord injuries in the United States, more abroad, clearly. So this is a big population that we need to provide technology and things to help. The difference between paraplegic and quadriplegic or tetraplegic, depending upon your Roman or Greek roots, paraplegic is basically a lower injury. The injury affects the legs, not the upper extremities. Basically, the injury level is determined by where the nerves have been damaged and where you have lost control or sensation below that. Most of our work at Exo has focused initially on paraplegics because we don't have any control on the arms. We don't, and we also don't actively balance the exoskeleton. We rely on the user's arm strength to guide them and keep them safe. So most of what I'm going to talk about here in terms of spinal cord injury, I'm thinking paraplegics. Now, we have had some low quads who have had some arm strength in our device, but that's not our intended market right now. That's not to say those aren't people that we need to help and that we're looking to help, but it's just not where we are right now. And why do we do this? Standing up is good for you. It stretches your muscles. We were meant to be standing. And so we think that both from a physical and an emotional perspective, that getting up, stretching, walking can really help people. So we also do have started working with more and more other diagnoses. The exoskeleton I brought today is called ExoGT, and this is actually the newest and greatest exoskeleton that Exo has to offer, released only in December. So, front row seats. We have basically expanded who we're looking at from spinal cord injury, traumatic brain injury, and we're now trying to focus also more on stroke rehab, multiple sclerosis, and other people who may have gait deficiencies who can benefit from this device. So we don't think there's limitations just at spinal cord injury. We think that there's a lot more out there, and we want to reach everybody that we can. So why bother with an exoskeleton? It is not $5,000 nor $40,000, so it's an expensive piece of equipment, especially, like David said, at these numbers, we have to pay for all the research, and also your production isn't super efficient and everything. So it's an expensive piece of equipment. So why bother? Why would you buy this? Wheelchairs are super fast. They're super awesome. They get you everywhere you need to go. There's a lot of reasons why. I'm going to touch on a few. For a lot of the population that we work with, gait training is a big deal. This is especially important for our stroke patients who are relearning how to walk, for some of our incomplete spinal cord injury patients who may be regaining some of their muscle strength as they go through the rehabilitation process. And while they're doing this, repetitive motion and getting a correct gait is really, really important. Has anyone ever seen somebody being trained in a physical therapy setting on a treadmill who's got gait deficiencies? A few hands? Okay, so can somebody describe what it looks like or what it might look like? Any situation? Anyone? Don't make me do all the talking. Yeah.
Well, at UCSF, the sports center in UCSF, they use a variable gravity unit, which has cameras along from behind, from the front, and on the side, which display the gait in three different monitors, and the person works with the trainer and also has the visual feedback from seeing themselves in language that they see. And they track the gait, and in some cases they'll put retroreflective devices on to get an actual measurement of the pronation and the other asymmetries of the gait.
So a lot of groups are doing a lot of work on repetitive gait and doing analysis on treadmills and things like that. Traditional gait rehab on a treadmill has been a person strapped into a bodyweight support system, or now we have the Alter G, which comes from below and basically holds you up. Super cool system. But basically, because the person can't support all of their load through their body or can't hold themselves up, something else has to, so there's usually straps involved, and then they can't necessarily provide all of the power, so a lot of times the Alter G has like handholds so people can help move the person's leg. Traditional gait therapy before some of these newer systems was three physical therapists at minimum, standing there manually moving the person's leg with a body weight support system holding up their weight. It works, it's awesome. But it's a lot of manpower. It's really exhausting work for the therapist because they're bent over moving somebody's leg physically. And it doesn't get the same guarantee of a good gait. It doesn't get the same immediate feedback because the therapist might be right there at the leg trying to move it and not seeing what all is going on. So we're trying to make that experience a little better with our gait training. Also, because we do not have to use a bodyweight support system, we can do more balance training and stuff, which can be better for those who are kind of regaining their ability to walk and may just be need some practice on balance or weight shifting, things like that. We also think there's some long-term uses. I've put question marks after a lot of these because, honestly, this is speculation on our part. It's based on studies of other devices, of speculation from scientists and people much, much smarter than I. But these are things that we and the rest of the exoskeleton industry are in the process of studying. Bone density. Bone density degeneration is a huge problem for spinal cord injury. When you don't load the bones and move and everything, your bones become more brittle because the body is really efficient, which is great, but not so great because then you get fractures and stuff like that. So we're hoping that we can at least slow the loss of bone density. Bowel and bladder function. It's a lot better when you stand up and move around. Just helps everything get flowing a little better. Urinary tract infections are a huge problem for people who spend a lot of time sitting in a chair, stuff like that. So we're hoping that by getting up and moving and getting everything stretched out and everything, that we can reduce some of the urinary tract infections, bowel and bladder issues, which of course makes for a better quality of life because no one wants to spend 2 months in the hospital every year with a UTI. Pain, neuropathic pain is a big problem. We're speculating. We've had some individuals say that they have less pain while walking in exo. No real proof on that yet. I don't have the studies done. They're in progress. But we really hope that we can reduce some pain. And for a lot of people, that affects their quality of life immensely. And so we're hoping that we can make that better. Circulation, always a big problem. You sit all the time. Your legs kind of swell. And your feet get tingly, but you can't feel that because you're paralyzed. It's not pleasant. One of our other pilots likes to tell me about her cankles and how after she walks, she doesn't have cankles anymore because the swelling goes down and she can walk better. That's a big deal, right? You can get your blood circulating a little better. It helps heal pressure sores better, and it just helps you be a healthier person. And then there's the emotional benefit. I don't have a question mark by that. I don't actually have, like, a study that says that people are happier, but I see people smile when they stand up, and so I'm going to take that as good enough. But for somebody to be able to walk into a room or go to a party and not look up everybody's nostrils or be able to give them a hug standing up, that means something. That's a big deal. And so the emotional benefit of being able to get up and walking and standing and at eye level with everyone else is a benefit of exoskeletons and one that we really hope to be able to bring to people in their daily life more frequently than they get it in the clinics right now. Oh, so this is, I had a picture. I didn't have to explain it all. Anyway, this is what traditional gait rehab looks like. This is clearly like a picture from I don't know when, but it's the best one I could find. So this is the bodyweight support system, the harness holding the person up, and then the therapist sitting on the side moving the legs manually. And the one behind is actually helping with the weight shift front to back. Robots can do it better. And then RGOs. RGOs are an option for people to walk. These are reciprocating gait orthoses. They basically are custom-formed braces that fit on the person's leg. And they scissor gait, so as you shift the weight, the one leg shifts forward, and then as you shift onto that, the other leg shifts forward. There's ones with knees in them, too, and they get a little more complex, but basically that's what an RGO is. People get them. Some people like them. Some people don't. Metabolically, these are really tiring to use. And so people tend not to use them for long periods of time. They use them for exercise, but not for daily use. So, and you're still not getting the natural motion of a gait. So this is kind of our alternative right now, outside of what robotics and the assistive technology community is doing now. Back one more. Haha. My slide. Okay, so these are some of the exoskeletons out on the market, and I don't honestly, I know a lot about some of these, not a lot about some of them, but I wanted to point them out because there's a lot of similarities in all of these devices. Indigo is a newer device out on the market. Well, not on the market yet, but it was researched out of Vanderbilt University. It's a super exciting new exoskeleton. It's module and breaks apart and does all kinds of other things. And so we're really excited. Well, I mean, from a competition standpoint, we're not, but in terms of helping people, excited to see how this comes out on the market and what some of their technology can do. Rex is a company, is a robot from Rex Bionics. Exoskeleton companies are not creative in their names. Rex is from Rex Bionics. Exo is from Exobionics. Like, we're not very exciting. But Rex Bionics is a, it's a wearable exoskeleton, and it walks, but its claim to fame is that it's very stable. It basically won't fall over. However, because of that, it's very wide. It has this really wide base, and it moves a little slower, and it's controlled by a joystick. But it's still pretty cool. I encourage you to look up videos of these later and everything. They're definitely great devices to see. ReWalk is by Argo Medical Technologies. They have a kind of similar philosophy to ours on design. They're an Israeli company. They're pretty cool. I don't know much more. And then we have Exo and this odd person in the Exo. So I'll show you guys all Exo in a little bit, but I just wanted to introduce you to what the exoskeletons are. So now I want to talk about the design of an exoskeleton. So we're going to have a little class participation time, and I want you guys all to take a few minutes, and you can work with the person next to you, you can cheat off the person next to you, I don't really care. But think about what the design requirements for an exoskeleton would be. So if you put yourself in my shoes 4 years ago when we were sitting down to redesign this exoskeleton, what does it need to have to be a viable device? And this can be something that, you know that the current devices don't have, something that it has to do. I want you guys to kind of think for a few minutes about what some of the challenges of designing a device like this might be.
Put them in priority order.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I saw a lot of, back about 20, 25 years ago, there was a lot of work with FPS walking.
Yeah, that's still going on. Oh, it's still big, so.
You know, I worked at the VA.
Okay.
And actually, Rob Whalen, who is the Alter Chief.
Okay.
He worked with us at
the
VA and at Nash as well. Well, actually, that's from the very beginning.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had one where the support around you was an acrylic sphere, so you could draw pressure down and suck the treadmill.
It was good to see you. I'll report to you that you behaved well in class. Caitlin's a student here at Stanford, but her dad is the CFO of Exo.
Oh, okay.
Okay, does everyone have an idea? Everyone have one thing, one requirement in mind at least? Okay. Who wants to give me a design requirement for building an Exo? We'll start at this side and work our way over. You guys have some time to think. Anyone over here? Yes. Okay, great. I should write these down, but lightweight and unobtrusive. We got that. That's a good one. Yes.
You can be able to put it on yourself and also, transportable.
Good. So it's got to move. You've got to be able to get on yourself. Now, for somebody who is a paraplegic or has had a stroke, that one's a challenge. So we'll come back to that. Yes. Aesthetics, good. Most engineers don't think about that until like way too late. That's why we have design people. Yes. Adjustability, good. So especially, I forgot to say this so you can change your answer, but I'm thinking specifically for in the rehab market. So right now, most of these devices are sold to rehab centers. And so adjustability to fit a wide range of people is incredibly important. There's one back here, yeah. Great, great. Speed, adjustability, and then terrain, come back to that. That one's one that's still a challenge for most people. Yeah. Safe. Good. Somebody got it. That should be number one, everyone. Okay. Next.
It allows for a natural gate.
Natural gate. Yeah, natural gate. Yes. Comfortable. That should probably be number two, right? Once you're safe, you want someone to actually wear it, and if it's not comfortable, that's going to be a problem. Yes? Good power supply. Don't want to be stuck in the middle of the grocery store. Battery goes down. That's a bad one. Yeah?
Do you have some sort of like stability? So like, if your arm's not supporting it, you just don't fall off.
Okay, great. Yeah, so the safety and stability, I think. Is also another good one. Does anyone have anything we haven't touched on? Yeah. Ease of use. Yeah, that ease of use in medical products is absolutely paramount because I'm going to go and give this device to a rehab center or to an individual, and it has to be easy for them to use because they're going to have to train other people to use it. And the more things that you can mess up when you use it, the less safe it becomes, right? And so ease of use is absolutely paramount when it comes to medical devices. And if you, the FDA, don't go into writing quality documentation for the FDA, but if you ever do, recently they've actually started to focus more on usability and the requirement for medical device companies to make things usable because there's been a lot of issues with things that were misused or valves that weren't really clear, and it killed people. I mean, in all honesty, it kills people. And so we have to be incredibly cognizant of usability. Yes? Durable. That's really key, especially in a rehab center where it's going to get moved around. Yes. Right, exactly. Yeah. Price is a big point for medical devices. I mean, everybody knows that the research costs and the manpower that goes into building something like any one of the exoskeletons you saw or that arm that we saw earlier, which I've seen and it's super cool. Cost is a problem, and so as we get stuff out onto the market, we have to keep in mind how can we keep the cost down now, and how can we keep them down later when we're at our ideal volume also. So all you manufacturing engineers out there, that's you. Let's get on that. Yeah. Great. And that's going to be my like whole control section, so we'll talk about that in a minute. And how does the user even tell the device what to do? That's a big problem. You don't want like the crazy pant legs that just like go. Anyone else have anything we missed? Yes. Okay, yeah, so I'm going to call that donning and doffing for later slides, but yeah, take it on, put it off. That's really key. Don't want to be stuck in. Like, also, you need to be able to get out of medical devices like this quickly. A lot of times a new patient who's up for the first time is going to experience dysreflexia or get lightheaded or have their blood pressure drop. Being able to get them to a safe position and get them out of the robot quickly is absolutely paramount to going back to safety. Everything's back to safety. So, yeah. That would be nice, yeah. noise, I mean, we want this to work into everybody's daily life, and even if it's in a clinic, it's not as big of a deal because you've got treadmills going on and everything, but user has to be able to hear the physical therapist telling them what to do over it and everything. Anyone else? Yeah. That one's a hard one based on the amazing inventions from some of these other companies. But yeah, IP rights at this point, you know, everybody's trying to develop a robot for, you know, people to use. And so everybody's kind of in this developmental state where we're all trying to come up with good ideas that aren't the same good ideas as everyone else has. And it's very difficult. And it's a good one, though. Very good. Anyone else? Did I leave anything out? Yes. Meets the user's needs. Great. Yeah. So I talked about the intended audience here for this device, spinal cord injury, MS, stroke. And so all of those populations have different needs, right? A stroke patient, their paralysis is hemiparesis. So this is the line of paralysis rather than here. And so I'm going to talk about some of the stuff that we've done in this new exoskeleton that was specifically to address those users' needs. Okay, so I think we got a lot. I'm going to go through some of the ways we addressed some of these in exo, just on some pictures. And then when I get to the end, whichever ones I didn't actually address, you can remind me again. I'll show you that as we do the demo and everything else. Adjustments. Adjustments have to be done in the clinic, so they have to be done quickly, they have to be done right, and they have to be done in a manner that's going to ensure safety for the user. These pictures are, you'll be able to see. After this, we'll let everyone come. You can poke at it. It'll be great. But this picture is the hip width adjustment, so we adjust the hip. This is really important for comfort, for maintaining the user's safety so we don't get rubbing in weird ways or anything and get pressure sores, and to allow the person to get in and out of it easily. So hip width, these are the shank and thigh adjustments, which basically, you know, adjust the height of the robot. Also very important for safety in order to get the person to fit in the exoskeleton device right, or else you don't want to be bending the knee somewhere where the knee shouldn't bend or something like that. The device has to be adjusted quickly. We're moving through a rehab center, so you get about an hour session. The therapist has to get that person up and walking to maximize their rehab time. So as you can see here, which you probably can't really see, but I'll show you later, we have a single bolt torque wrench that adjusts all of the things. The lines are clearly marked so that you can reset it to the same setting every time. We also use a torque wrench because we want to make sure that the device is tightened enough, but not too much, because too much will fatigue the part. Not enough means it will collapse and hurt someone. So we have tried to make this usable and fail-safe. We can also adjust some of the other features. We adjust hip ab and adduction, which is this one, and that's done with a single screw bolt also. So that can allow the physical therapist to accommodate the needs of that person. Padding. Padding is really important. This is safety. This is comfort. This is keeping the machine on. We do a lot to make sure that the person does not get any pressure sores, there's no rubbing, and that everything fits comfortably. These are torso pads that fit basically all of our users. So the smallest one is this top one. It's basically unobtrusive. We try to let, you know, it be as not there as possible because that's more comfortable. But for somebody with a higher injury or a bigger torso, or maybe who just likes the comfort of being kind of strapped in a little tighter, we can use one of these bigger torso pads. And this one is actually for our Hawaii demo. I don't know. In Hawaii, we had a lot of people that really like spam, and they had extra girth that we had to accommodate. That's what that is. They're great people in Hawaii. It's really fun. You should find some reason to work there. And then we've got braces, and we'll see the braces when we get up, but the thigh braces have adjustable padding on them, Velcro straps that can be adjusted to any, width of your thigh. We've got shin guards to prevent bruising. Those can be padded as necessary. We have pads for the foot, for the feet. A lot of times after an injury, people have an asymmetry to their skeletal frame, and we want to make sure that we compensate for that and don't cause any injuries or strain on people while we do that. So we sell the device with a packet of foot risers for different heights of foot imbalances. There's a lot that goes into padding and making sure that the device fits properly and comfortably. Donning and doffing was discussed. I'm going to bring out the excerpt for this. So for a spinal cord injury patient to get into the robot, they clearly can't just walk up and sit down, right? If they could, it'd be awesome. It's not going to happen for most of our patients. So donning and doffing is a really important thing that we considered. So in an exoskeleton, any degree of freedom that you don't control actively, you need to lock out. So if I just let somebody who's completely paralyzed with a free degree of freedom, they're going to fall. It's going to be an unsafe situation. So in this case, hip abdomen adduction, we don't control with a motor, so we lock it out. However, in order to allow people to get into and out of the exoskeleton, we needed to allow that to be free. So we've got a nice locking, latching mechanism over here that allows the device to open up. And as you can see, this is a super awkward position for a robot to sit in, but it allows a nice big platform for a user to come in, transfer, they can even, put a hand on here for stability, and then sit in the exoskeleton, and the exo will then wrap back around them. So this is how we deal with donning and doffing. Also, the feet, if you look at the feet and the way that they're done, are there any snowboarders out there? Anyone? Nobody in this room snowboards. Okay, we've got one, two. Okay, you might recognize the bindings. We actually kind of stole them from the snowboard industry, but they're great because they latch easily and somebody can do it with one hand as they reach down and stabilize themselves. And so that was done to make it more accessible for somebody to put the device on their own. And we'll do a whole demonstration of Fernanda putting the device on, but I'll probably help her. So, and then we talked about safety, so I just want to touch on some of the factors of safety that we thought about in this design. This is not all of them. We could go on for hours. You guys don't have hours. I'm going to move on. But safety, we've got hard stops on the joints. The knee cannot go past straight, because that would hurt. So we have fail stops with hard stops. We also have soft stops in the software so that the device does not control past that limit. Adjustable settings. So this goes back to addressing our individual user's needs. If somebody has been in a chair for a long time, their knee joint or hip joint might be tight and may not extend to the full, straight or whatever. So in software, we are able to adjust that to ensure that we do not hurt the person while they're walking. And then normally on brakes, this is what happens when something goes wrong and the, exo has to be shut down for some reason. The brakes are on regardless if there's no power. And so that's a big safety feature for us so that you don't just crumble. The device still holds you up and somebody can help you down. Okay. I'm going to go through, how much time do we have?
About 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Okay, I'm going to go through control. I'm going to go through control in like 2 seconds, and then we'll do a demo, because that's more important. Okay, there's two methods of controlling where the user tells the exo what to do. First method, there's actually three, no one cares about the second one, I'm going to skip it. First one is the therapist pushes the button. Basically, the therapist is guiding the user to the correct position, they push the button, the exoskeleton takes the next step. Super exciting. The next mode is what we call pro step, And this is basically, the step is initiated by the user's position. So when I'm a therapist, I'm actually looking for the person to shift their weight off of the stance leg, off of what was the stance leg, onto what will be the stance leg, to ensure that they are ready to take the next step and in a safe position. And so the robot can also see that and interpret that. And once the person is shifted forward to the correct position, then the step is initiated and they move on. Okay, that was my 2-minute control. We'll see it in action. It'll be more exciting. Thank you for your attention. We'll do a demo and then questions. And I know 20 minutes isn't a lot, so I'll be here if there's no one here. Talk to you after if you have more questions. Fernanda, you're on. Huh? Where's my designated chair holder? If you can. Oh, yeah. So what I'm doing right now is I'm just inputting Fernanda's settings so that the robot knows how long her legs are and how fast she wants to go and everything. All strapped in, and then we basically have a backpack module back here that holds basically the robot, batteries, brains, everything else to the user. It also provides some stability and support. Yeah. We've got this really sweet corset because everyone loves a corset. Okay. Do you do the?
Yeah. Also knows, you know, what's a safe standing position, and if your feet are too far in front of you, you just can't provide the power to get up, and so it yells at you and makes sure that you properly do the physical therapist duties that the engineers forget to do sometimes. Okay, ready? Okay, leaning on three, one, two, three. Thank you. Give a hand to our chair holder. Yeah. We've only wheeled chairs in this room, so he got volunteered by a friend. So. I'm going to give you control and you can walk. I haven't given you control yet.
So the robot is actually holding me up.
Okay.
And at this position, I can actually relax my knees instead of before it's like stiff. So these are some of the improvements that's happened. There's a lot more. It allows the body to be really in its tissue mode rather than its contractive mode.
Okay, go ahead. No, you got to hold on. That's it. There you go. Happy. Right step first.
And the gait of this is actually shifting side to side. I have to work with it by shifting side to side.
I'm going to stand still, and we're going to turn on carpets. Go ahead. Good. I'm going to hold. Okay, go ahead and push. So we don't have a lot of runway here, but as Fernanda walks, you'll see some of her muscles kind of loosen up or start working with the exoskeleton a bit better, and her gait will get smoother, and she'll need less assistance from the device because she does have some power, and so we're just learning how to better harness that. And doing circles on carpet is fun. Her body shift, her body position. So as she shifts over onto that stance leg, yeah. Yeah.
How is she able to turn?
She's doing a lot of work to turn. Basically, we're kind of relying on the split stance and the pivot right now, and on carpet, that's not so great. So I think somebody might have mentioned... Like during the swing, you're saying? So some of it might be her power and how she's working with the machine right now. In a complete paras, it would probably be more symmetric, but because she has some power, depending upon how she's shifting and things, that's going to affect the gait. We also don't just play back a trajectory each time. We're live calculating what needs to happen. So if she's shifted more forward or something, we're going to lift the knee higher to make sure that it clears the ground. So it could be postural, it could be something. If I were a physical therapist, I'd probably yell at her and tell her to do something differently. But I'm not, so.
Can you do something that shows us to do a couple of different kind of reactions to your emotions?
In the old one, yes, it would lock up. And that was a very interesting discovery for us because in my situation and some people with incomplete spinal cord that have a little bit of power, it wasn't recognizing that. So with this model, it gives me a percentage that is lacking, for example. If my right leg is at 60, the machine will kick in 40. And my left is at 30, up to 70. And it's also a program where I will lean in position and lock. And that gives me the movement to go forward. And also this movement, which is a huge, huge, huge advance to it. This and that, rather than on a normal gait, a person's body doesn't start from a stop. There has to be some just variation of balance to move forward to get going. And that has been a tremendous improvement in this particular model. Yeah. And before too, they have worked where the knee flexion can be adjusted to the comfort of my range of motion. And what I've already learned from this model is that it really gives me a good full range of motion with the legs, where I took place in the knee and also in the ankle flexion. And that stretches out my heel. That stretches out that part. And one of the things that I was learning from XM, before I even got onto this, even though I can walk for the blocker, I wasn't associating my back thigh. And because there is a pack, the movement I can feel from the back gets expanded much more. And in that repetitive motion, when I'm not gone into the XL, there's a stimulation that's pretty much awakened. So things kind of gives a stimulation to my inner parts. And right now, my legs are already on fire because of that stimulation. And that's it.
In a good way. Yeah.
You took a big breath before you stood up for
the first
time.
Yes.
Is it fun to you? Is it a lot of work to do? Is it both?
Scary?
It's all of that. Because you, as a user, this is not a device like a car you turn it on and it takes off. As a user, there has to be a relationship. More important is that a user, a relationship into his or her body. That's very, very important. That's what I love about working with the engineers in the clinical group is there's that language that goes on amongst all of us at collaboration. Because there's an engineering language and a vocabulary. There's a kinesiology language that's going on with medical, biological aspect. And then there's the user whose variation goes from either very static or continuous improvement. Now I have to be able to articulate and give that feedback and say, you know what, it's not feeling right or it's too forceful or I can feel the fact that it's not balanced for me. And they need to hear that. And then it's I don't want to say magic, but when it all comes together, it makes it clear as smooth as rock. And when you said taking a deep breath, you have to mentally prepare yourself. Because if you're from a sit position, if you're not prepared for that, you know, the machine, this is pretty powerful. You can do you have to kind of sit in there, like make sure your ski boots are in the right place, straps the right place, any equipment that you put on. You have to have that, relationship. And the engineers and the clinicians are not just looking at the gear itself, but also how that body interacts with it. So there's a lot of eyes going on. So when we walk at the lab, there's a lot of talking going on. And because it has to have immediate feedback. I remember in the beginning it was locking up and we weren't understanding that. And Daryl, who's a clinician, says, quit helping it. I said, well, I can't help it because the body got used to the movement.
Yeah.
The repetitiveness of it. My body and my muscles got all warmed up and ready to go. And it wanted to keep going, but it wasn't programmed to recognize that. So now it is.
The whole device, the last quote I have is 50. I haven't actually weighed the new one. So, yeah. There's a lot of work to be done in terms of weight, especially if it's going to be an individual user's device. But there was some consideration taken for it, but safety and adjustability was paramount. So, yeah, weight. Yeah. It depends. Yeah, definitely for somebody who, like, if I were to put you in right now, like, it would look awful. Well, we'll just start with that. When I walk in it, I've been doing this for 6 years. I know how to work with the device, so it kind of looks a little better. You kind of learn to work with it. We now have this adaptive assist mode, though, that gives a little more flexibility in the gait and allows the user's power to be used also. And so that tends to look a little better when you're walking if you have power. So it's still trying to hold you to a good gait, but it's giving you a little more flexibility to do it yourself. And so there's kind of different results, and it really, for anyone studying control systems, don't pick a system where your human is in the loop and can provide more power than your system can. Don't do it. Yeah.
Primarily,
this is my first public appearance outside the lab. But as far as the use of this, if I have this, my use of this would be to articulate the sit to stand up. Kind of like my own personal squatting machine. And what I also like about this device is from the beginning it was really programmed here, but before standing up, there is a motion that I'm leaning forward and kind of locked. It gives me about 3 seconds. Just that 3 seconds allows my lower back to get stretched from that position because it's not something I do normally. And here, standing where I can do this, I could not do this by myself standing up just with this side-to-side range of motion. But this gives me kind of like a scaffolding. And it allows me, and I can play with it, it allows me to work with the rotation within my knees and my hips, even in a very small incremental way.
So, yeah, we basically really designed this device to be in a rehab setting, so it would be used by a lot of people, you know, a lot of straight line walking back and forth, that's why turning, not our strongest suit. We are doing some studies right now with people using it more independently and on a more regular basis, but it really needs some design work to really move into the home. And so we really rely on a spotter right now to maintain safety and a clinician to be in the loop.
I want to add on to that too. Usually in a conventional rehab with a walker and crutches, the person walking gets trained physically because eyesight is always down here from here. So we end up learning how to walk kind of like in a tripod position. With this, I feel like I can elevate my eyesight at this eye level and not have to depend so much on the walker to look down. Rather brings the posture of the wearer of right torso.
Can they use it as self, like, as control to gain, or when she's, like, getting up, can she, like, have that emotion in her when she, like, gets up?
It is possible, and when I'm testing, like, I do that, but it's really not designed for that, so you can have accidental button pushes and things that way. So we're really relying on the spotter to initiate the stand and to change the modes and to change some of the settings. Eventually, we definitely want to get that all to the user, but haven't quite figured it out yet, so we're hiring. yeah. Oh, sorry.
It's 5:30 now, so what I think we'll do is take a break so that the people who need to go can go now. And anybody wants to stay here, they're welcome to stay for as long as you want. So you need to leave, now's the time. And let's give a warm.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll send you a contact. Thank you. Hi.
Did you say you guys were hiring?
Yeah.
For what type of position?
We have a few engineering positions open, and are you stopping for good? Are you stopping?
Yeah.
Okay. Pull your legs together. I think an electrical, software, and a mechanical spot open. So, yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. I think they're all up on the webpage. Yeah. So, exobionics.com/careers.